If you're here a couple of months ago, we kind of started this little mini-series looking at teamwork. And I did this thing about why team works. And then when I was doing it, I thought, actually, maybe we ought to look at it from the other perspective as to why team doesn't work, because often team doesn't work, does it? So you can tell I haven't done a PowerPoint today because we've got the flip chart here. That's because I just haven't had time to put that together for you. But let me remind you some of the things that I said about why team works. Team works because, number one, God himself is team. God is Trinity himself. So if God is team, it's hardly surprising that we discover that, point number two, he created us to be team. He didn't create us to be on our own. He created us to be together. The first team was a marriage. So if you're if you're married to someone, you're a team. You're either a good team or you're a bad team, but you're a team. You're a team of people that are put together. Family is team. You're either a bad family or a good family, but you're a team. But actually, we're teams in all kinds of different parts of life, aren't we? Everywhere we go, we find ourselves in a team. And we're either doing well as a team or we're not doing so well as a team. But God created us, each and every one of us, not to be loners, but to be connected to each other in all kinds of different ways. And actually, we are not complete until we are a team. We're incomplete on our own. You know, there's another bit to us, if you want. We don't find completion for ourselves until other people... You know, no one is the full picture, are they? Is anyone the full picture out there? Has everyone got all the skills, all the ability, all the understanding? No one. No one put their hand up anyway. No one's going to admit to... No, none of us have. So we need each other. In fact, actually, the amazing thing about the church is the more people God adds to his church, the more complete we become. You know, the more new gifts and skills are added to the church as each person enters into God's family. And together, we become more. You know, on our own, we're an individual, we're valued, we're precious, but as we add to that, it becomes more and more and more. And actually, in the mass of heaven, we multiply as people are added to the team. And finally, the last point, 5 points it was, is that teams work because we have the same purpose. We have the same purpose. We're trying to do the same thing. That's why I get very passionate about churches working together. We are just one church. We're not competing with each other. We're not trying to be cleverer than each other. We're not trying to be bigger than each other. We're just here to serve Jesus, to worship him, to love him, and to see his glory come on this earth. So it's good for churches to work together rather than actually compete against each other. That's why I'm so committed to churches together in Eastleigh and Hope and all those things that we do together. And so there you go, 5 good reasons why team works. But you all know, don't you? And I know that team doesn't always work well, does it? Sometimes team goes badly. Well, let's watch a video clip where a team didn't quite work out how they wished or hoped it would do. Great. Well, there you go. There's another example. We've got the donkeys and also the birds as examples to us of bad teamwork. We're going to look at seven different things that actually I think are worth... And each of these are a lack of something. So there's seven different lacks of things within teams that actually take place that actually cause teams not to work. And I think most of these you can... And some of these I will apply to Scripture, not all of them, but most of these you can apply to Scripture in all kinds of different ways. We see them in Scripture. So the first one is this. And actually, this is probably a foundational one, is that teams don't work because of the lack of a thing called trust. A lack of trust. Your marriages begin to break down when trust is lost, don't they? You know, if you look at any kind of broken marriage, if you kind of speak to people and spend some time listening to them, you probably find there's a point when trust started to be kind of chipped away, and then gradually trust was lost, and then the whole marriage began to kind of crumble. But if you look at a lot of different teams, trust, when trust disappears, then actually the foundations of a team no longer exist and the team doesn't function incredibly well. How well do we believe in each other? Just think of some of the teams that you're in. Think of your wife or your husband, perhaps. Think of some of the ministry team, maybe, or the diaconate, or different teams that you serve in the church, or actually teams at work. Do you trust those people implicitly? Do you believe in them? I think one of the biggest things that we can do to each other is to believe in each other. You know, God believes in us. Is that a good thing to know? God believes in you. God believes that you are valued, that you are precious, that you are gifted, that you are able, that you participate. All these things God believes in. And do we actually share that together as teams? And when we don't believe in each other, when we start not trusting each other, when we start devaluing each other, when we don't realize each other are precious, then actually the very foundation of teamwork, trust, begins to disappear. Do you need encouraging from time to time? Only three of you. Is that the case? I think it's something common to us all, that each and every one of us needs to be encouraged. Even the most confident of people, who look the most confident, actually deep inside, every now and then needs someone to come along to say to them, you know, you're doing well. And encouragement comes out of trusting each other, believing that actually a person is doing well. I mean, it's terrible if you were to encourage someone, say, yeah, you're doing great, you're doing fantastic, and then turned your back and said to someone else, oh, they're rubbish, and they overheard you. What would that do to them? That's not trust, is it? That's discouragement. That's actually destroying a person. So this idea of trust is actually believing in people and actually being able to say to them, actually, I believe in you. I think you're doing a great job, and go and do even better. Recognizing that we all make mistakes. Has anyone never made a mistake? We all make mistakes, don't we? And the funny thing is that we get embarrassed when we make a mistake. There's this thing in our head that says somehow we've got to be the perfect person and do the perfect job within a team. But actually, there are moments when we all make a mistake. Have I told you about dropping pots of paint in Brown Brothers? Does that sound familiar? I can't remember if I said this. It does sound, Kim's going, yeah, I've heard this story. Sorry, Kim. She's the only one. But I remember dropping a pot of paint when I used to work for Brown Brothers on the paint floor and having to go to my manager and saying, I've just dropped this £90 worth of paint on the floor. And I remember him saying this, every single one of us drops a pot of paint at some point in our careers. And we all do. And the strange thing is we try and cover it up, but actually, a recognition by each and every person and going, yeah, do you know what, Pete? I know you're a failure. Well, I know you make a mistake from time to time, but actually, so do I. And actually, we're in the same boat, aren't we? We're both people that, along the journey, somewhere along the journey, we're going to get it wrong. And trust is actually about recognizing that and saying, it's okay. We hit the mistakes when we hit the mistakes, and we stand with each other together in trust. Leaning on each other, trusting each other, and actually being vulnerable together. The best teams are the teams that learn to be transparent, honest with each other, able to be who we really are. To say, actually, I'm struggling in this area. I mean, some of you be in workplaces where, you know, you go into work and the manager calls you in and says, okay, how are you doing on this? And everything in you is you want to say, yeah, we're doing great, boss. Everything's going fine. You know, we've got it all sorted. Everything's great and grand. When the truth is, actually, you need to be saying to him, do you know, boss, it's not good. It's pretty bad. We've got problems here. We can't work out the solutions. We're not making any headway. But everything in us wants to say, actually, everything's perfect because we're not honest. We're not transparent. We're not prepared to actually say, we haven't got it. Ford was going downwards. Peter McNally is he was the CEO of Ford. And when he went into Ford, he was driven in by chauffeur. I think the car was a Range Rover or something. It wasn't a Ford that picked him up. And when he got into the Ford car park for the very first time, he noticed that all the directors, not one of them owned a Ford car. Now, that says something about where Ford was at that point in time. And when he went into the boardroom, he tried to set this thing in place where there was honesty in the boardroom. And for the first period of time, no one would admit that there were any mistakes in Ford. And eventually, one department, he put this system in place. He said, you know, when you've got an issue, when things are going well, you know, make it green. And when things aren't going so well, there's a few problems, but we think we're making some headway, make it amber, yellow. And when things are really bad, you know, highlight those in red and then bring your reports and tell us how it really is. And so these people would come into the boardroom and they would all say, boss, it's green, it's green, it's green, it's all green. And he's scratching his head going, if it's green, why are we not making any money? Why is the company spiraling downwards? And eventually, one department got together and they had their review meeting. And the head of the department says, guys, we've got some reds here. We've got some ambers. And they started to mark these things. And they looked at him and said, you going into the boardroom to tell them we got reds and we got ambers? And he says, sure I am. And he went into that boardroom and he was the first person in that boardroom. And they went round the room, everything's green, everything's green. And they got to this department and he said, actually, we got some ambers. And they all went, whew. And then he said, well, we got some reds as well. And everyone in that room looked at him and thought, that's the last time we're going to see him. He'll be gone tomorrow morning. The truth was, that's what exactly the CEO wanted. He wanted honesty. He wanted transparency. He wanted people to say, this is actually how it is. We're not doing very well. Because actually, that built trust. That was the true picture. When you've got truth, you can build on the truth. And when we're working as teams, when we don't have trust, it all begins to just collapse around us. Interestingly, that gentleman is now, guess what? Of Ford. He's the CEO of Ford today. Saw him on telly just the other day. So the first thing is a lack of trust. Teams don't work when there's a lack of trust. Number two is when there is a lack of complementation. I should have come up with a short word, really, shouldn't I? There you go, complementation. Paul writes this, doesn't he, in 1 Corinthians 12. He says, the eye can't say to the hand, I don't need you. And the hand cannot say to the feet, I don't need you. It might have been in our last talk, I can't remember. It was a talk recently where we kind of looked at, you know, how ridiculous to have a body that is just an eye. But actually, I mean, Paul writes such a beautiful piece of writing about how the body works together, how it functions together. And an eye without a hand, an eye can't say to the hand, I don't need you, because an eye is absolutely useless without a hand. One of the problems that we face in life is that many of us, and I think I've made this mistake before, many of us think we can go it alone. We think we've got all the gifts. We think we are the eye, the hand, the ear, the leg, the arm, the heart, the brain, everything. We think we're everything. Or one of the big problems of teams is that when we build a team, What we do is we go and look for people that's like us. Do you imagine a body being full of eyes? It'd be a bit weird, wouldn't it? Not very nice at all. Wouldn't function very well. It'd just see things. It wouldn't do anything. And what we often do is we actually find people just that think like us, that see things like us, that work like us, whose personality types are like us, and are gifted in a very similar way to us. We get on with those people because they tick like us, don't they? And we add them to our teams. And sometimes, actually, in our churches, and while we do this, I think for team leaders, it'd be good to be reviewing teams and saying, actually, have we got the right complementation of skills and gifts within the team? Just imagine a team that is just red. So we've got a team that their whole role in life is to bring colour to life. Yeah? To bring colour. But red says we're only going to choose red people to be part of the spectrum of colour. What colours would we see? Thanks, Pete. I'm glad Pete came tonight because the rest of you dozed off, I think, already. We'd just see red. It's not a difficult question. You'd just see red, wouldn't you? You just see red. What do you need to add to red to get the full colours that we see in the colour spectrum? We need blue and yellow, don't we? Do you know, to my embarrassment, I had to Google that to find out what the primary colours are, just to check I was right. Red needs blue and yellow, and then what colours do you have? Yeah, list as many as you want. But yeah, we have reds, loads of different shades of reds, loads of different blues, loads of different yellows, greens, purples, oranges, turquoise. The whole lot suddenly comes to life. The whole spectrum of colours come to life because the team is complemented. You imagine a football team or a netball team with just strikers or shooters. It is shooters, isn't it? The netball team, thank you, Sue. With no defence. Tim? You've played in some teams like that, haven't you? Everyone wants to be a striker. No one wants to be a defender. What happens?
Arsenal never win anything.
Yeah, you lose, don't you? You lose. And many teams fail because actually there's not a complementation of gifts and skills to actually make the team function well. And the Bible tells us, and we're doing the gifts of grace, so this kind of overlaps a little bit with this sermon, that there are many gifts and many skills. There are those who start things. There are those who finish things. There are ideas people. There are implementers. There are administrators. There are strategists. There are leaders. There are followers. There are facilitators. There are all kinds of different people that complement each other so actually good things can be achieved for the sake of the kingdom of God. So that was number two. Number three is a lack of humility. A lack of humility. Ephesians 4, verse 2. Be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. One of the biggest killers of team is the me in team. Isn't it? You've heard it said there's no I in team. But there is an M and there is an E, isn't there? There is an M and there is an E. Many teams have been established and collapsed because of the sake of an individual. Some individuals create teams. You know, they say, oh, I'm a great team player. I'm going to be a team leader. But all they do is they build this thing around them to kind of push them up. It's like a kind of a structure that's somehow like a platform which is going to lift them up so that they look even greater than they were before. And that's what, for them, team is all about. Do you remember Roy Keane? Sorry, this is a football analogy. So half of the congregation has just gone to sleep. But when Roy Keane left Man United, I vaguely remember this, so I looked it up again. He fell out big time with Fergie. But one of the issues is Roy Keane had just got too big for his boots. He was a bad influence in the dressing room. And you get that in football teams. You get certain people that become so good, so great, but actually no longer function within the team. And do you know what Fergie did? He sacked him overnight. The world of football was kind of hit with this great news that Roy Keane was out of Man United, and he removed him from the team. Within 2 years, Man United were back at the top of the table and winning trophies again. One of the problems is that when we start thinking about our position in the team, am I getting the kudos? Am I getting the credit? Are people seeing me in everything? Or we get grumpy because we feel that we're not. We have missed the whole purpose of team. Humility is actually about service, isn't it? That's what the Bible teaches us, that we are to serve one another. Jesus served. Maundy Thursday, we're reminded that Jesus washed his disciples' feet as an example to them that they are to serve each other. As I have done this to you, so you serve each other. So wash each other's feet so that the team becomes successful, so that there is service that's taking place. Humility, the lack of humility, is a major reason why teams fail. Number four is a lack of listening. I apologise for the notices earlier for actually mentioning that one or two people weren't listening when I was giving the notices. But have you ever been in a situation when you've been trying to say something to someone and they're not listening? Do you find that frustrating? I do, especially when I'm giving the notices. And then, or have you actually, and I've been in this position many times, have you ever been listening to someone and they've been saying something to you and then they stop and they look at you and you suddenly realise you're meant to respond and you're thinking to yourself, I don't know what they just said. I haven't got a clue. For some of you sitting there going, yeah, I've been talking to Joth once, and he seemed to respond in a very strange way to something. In my early days as a minister, I remember actually going home one day thinking, I've got a serious problem. I'm not hearing what people are saying to me. I would be, after the church, people would be talking to me, and it was just like this noise that was going on. And sometimes I was just looking at a person and I was thinking, I'm actually not hearing what this person is saying. And I remember going to the Lord saying, Lord, you need to teach me to hear, to listen. Not just to hear, but to actually listen to what a person is saying. James says this, my dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. You always know when to take note of something when someone says that, don't you? Take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. We need to learn what it is to listen to each other. Many teams have people that just don't listen. And one of the problems is that the people that talk the most are the ones that are heard the most, aren't they? You know, the loudest, the pushiest, the ones that speak the longest. You know, those ones that go on and on and on. Actually, I was in a meeting the other day. Not a meeting in our church, I have to say, but I won't tell you where it was. And I was in this meeting and someone was going on and on and on and on. And something went in my head and I thought, will someone please shut them up? Not because we hadn't heard them, we heard them. We heard what they had to offer. And it was good, okay, thank you for that. But they kept going on and on, they just pushed and pushed and pushed. Have you ever been in that? You might have been in that position yourself. Well, good teams are actually people that listen to each other. They stop. When you're in a team, if you're ever in a meeting and there's someone sitting in the meeting that hasn't spoken, at some point someone please stop and say, could you tell us what you think? Because you might find that that quiet little individual, that quiet soul, has the very words of God in that moment. I've discovered that time and time again. I remember a lady at Harlow Baptist Church. We were having a church meeting. That's a team, isn't it? Church meeting. And this lady never spoke. And I can't remember what the subject was, but it was one of those meetings where we were discussing something and you could sense the meeting, a bit like a boat, really. You could sense the meeting, someone spoke and everyone kind of rushed over this side. Go, oh, yeah, yeah, that. That's where we need to go. And then someone else would say something, and then you felt the whole boat going the other way and thinking, no, actually, we ought to do that thing over there. And almost to the point that the whole thing was just rocking. You know, we're all feeling a bit sick, you know, thinking, oh, my life, I haven't got a clue what we're meant to be doing. And then this dear lady, who I can't remember us ever speaking, in a moment of stillness, suddenly spoke. And she said what God had to say to us. And we all went, that's it. And the whole church voted on what she actually said. You know, that quiet person often has the voice of God. But actually, when we're in team, particularly church teams, who are we listening for? Who do we really want to hear? We want to hear God, don't we? We want to hear what God is saying. So help us to learn to listen, Lord Jesus. Number five. We're getting there. Lack of harmony. Lack of harmony. Ephesians 4 again. This could have been the reading, actually, for this talk from Ephesians 4. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. When teams aren't harmonious, then teams can fall out. But this is not suggesting to us that there should never, ever be conflict in teams. In fact, actually, I would argue, and many writers would argue, when there is no conflict in teams, teams don't work well. Because when there's not conflict in teams, it means that this isn't happening. We're not trusting each other. Because the truth is, if I'm different, you're different, if we've come from different backgrounds, if we've got different personalities, if we've got different skills, what is likely to happen when we come to meet together? We're more likely to have different perspectives, aren't we? We're going to see things differently. So it will not be surprising for us to discover that as we're talking in meetings, that occasionally there is difference. And difference, can I say this, is good. Difference is good. So the next time you're putting your neck out, and I've been in a few meetings when a few people put their necks out, and I've done it occasionally as well, and said, I'm not sure if I see it like that. Can I say to you, you have permission from God and from the senior minister of Eastleigh Baptist Church, although that doesn't hold for much, you have the permission to put your neck out and to say, actually, I don't see it that way. Can I just share a different way? The harmony is about how we do that. The harmony is about how we deal with conflict, how we deal with difference. If we do it with value, if we do it with respect, if we do it with appreciation, if we do it gently with each other, if we're kind of banging our fists on the table and getting all hot under the collar, that's the time to kind of ease up and perhaps go and cool down somewhere. That's not good. But if we trust each other, that's why this one's so key. If we trust each other, we can come to a place when we can share things together and actually be able to say, this is how I feel. And the thinking is that as different views are put upon the table, greater trust is built up amongst the team. There are some meetings I've gone away on. There's some meetings I've gone away on and I've got in the car or I've gone home and I've thought to myself, that was a bad meeting. And they're generally the meetings when people really get quite angry and become personal. You know, when you enter into the place of being personal, or having criticizing people personally, you've misunderstood what this is about, what difference is about. Difference isn't about attacking each other personally. And I've been in some of those meetings when it's become personal. And I've occasionally, when I'm chairing those meetings, I say, no, we don't. This is not about becoming personal. It's not about pointing the finger at people. It's about just expressing a view. But I have actually been in other meetings when it's not been good or it hasn't felt comfortable. There's been lots of different opinions voiced. But I've gone home and got in the car and thought, actually, that's been a good meeting. It's not been a comfortable meeting, but it's been a good meeting. And surprisingly, the next meeting often is the most harmonious of any meeting that group has ever had. Because people have shared their differences and then they've moved forward. I would always say, and I've said this many times, so, you know, if you've heard me say this, I apologize. But I would always say, bring your opinions with courage, but hold it lightly. Come and offer a view, a perspective, and say, this is how I see it. Place it upon the table, but don't hold on to it tightly like this and say, I'm not going to let go of it. If no one else agrees, I'm going to hold on to it so tightly no one can get it out of my hands. Don't do that. Just hold it gently. Come open-handed. Come with an open heart to be persuaded that actually God might be saying something else. And you might be surprised where you end up. And it's lovely when you're in a meeting where someone says, I came quite convinced this was the right thing to do. And as I've listened to other people, number four, as I've listened to other people, I've been persuaded that now this is the right direction in which this team needs to head. That's number five. Number six is, just about get all these on here, is lack of purpose. So some teams have been around forever and ever. And once they had a reason, they knew exactly what they were meant to be doing. But they reached that reason. UKIP may be such a team. I don't know. They reached that reason. And then they had to continue because they had to exist. But actually the team just kept going and going and going. And eventually they lost their purpose. And the team was no longer really a team, but it just kept going. And someone eventually asked them, why do you exist? And they go, we don't know. We haven't got a clue. There are moments when the purpose is actually delivered when the team needs to say, we've done what we've done. I think our outreach team, for example, has gone for a season where it's delivered well the big welcomes that we've been doing amongst us and some of the big events and has come to a natural conclusion where the purpose actually has changed as to what God is doing. And so that team is now in flux and change. And that's a good thing. That's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. So if there is no purpose, we don't understand our purpose, or we've lost our purpose, we've got to rediscover what the purpose is, or actually decide whether actually the team needs to exist anymore. And then the last one is this, and it's an important one. It's not last because it's on the bottom and it's not important. In fact, actually, this one is absolutely essential. These are all important, but this one is absolutely essential, and it's the lack of... Oh, I can never remember if commitment as well. Yeah, it does. Lack of commitment. When team members don't buy into teams, teams become ambiguous and they become disconnected. I was kind of pondering this in the light of Easter. I was thinking, is there a team that lacked commitment? They didn't actually fully buy in, didn't really fully understand what the situation and the circumstance was. And as I was pondering that, I suddenly thought, crumbs, it was that team that Jesus chose, called the disciples. You know, that Garden of Gethsemane, that team just dissipated, didn't it? They just disappeared. They deserted Jesus. They betrayed him to start with. Why did Judas betray Jesus? That's another sermon in itself. But why did Judas betray Jesus? Because actually, probably, he didn't buy into what Jesus was doing. They didn't understand what Jesus was doing. And the commitment level required. I mean, Peter said, I'll die for you, Jesus. And Jesus said, you ain't bought into that, Peter. You haven't bought into that. You haven't understood what that means. You will eventually understand, Peter, but you don't yet. And actually, you will deny me before I go to the cross. So there's an example of a team that lacked commitment. Do we buy in to teams? I want to suggest to you that actually sometimes we don't buy into teams. Sometimes there isn't commitment. There are elements where the members of teams don't even turn up to teams. They're kind of, yeah, I'm in, but I'm not really in. I want the status of being part of that team, but I'm not actually buying in to what the team is really all about. Commitment is absolutely essential. Because if commitment doesn't take place, if every member of the team isn't buying in and saying, yes, I understand what we're part of, what we're going, where we're trying to go, what we're doing, then what happens when that there's lack of commitment? Well, then the trust element starts breaking up. And once the trust element starts, I should have done this one the other way because this is really, trust is foundational. Once the trust element begins to break up, then the team just falls apart completely. And so commitment becomes absolutely crucial. And for team leaders, and we'll look at team leaders next time, for team leaders, it's important that we help people come to a place where they're able to say, yeah, I buy in to that. I am part of that, and I'm going to give my all as best I can into the team. So here are these seven things that I've come up with. Now, you may come up with some other ones, and you may be sitting there in a minute or two. You're going to have a chance to offer. So trust, complementation, making sure the team has got the right gifts and skills within it. Humility, that we're serving one another. Listening, that we're actually listening to each other, not just saying our bit, but listening to each other. Harmony, that we might be harmonious and peaceful, but actually allowing difference to take place in a healthy way. Purpose, that we would have a clear purpose within our teams, and that we, each and every member of the team, will be able to say, yes, I'm buying in to that. There's some of my thoughts anyway. We did have a roving mic somewhere, didn't we, at some point? Oh, thank you. Great. So an opportunity for you to add to the list, and there are others. There are other things that you can write to this, add to this, or to make some additional comments from your own experiences or your own thoughts.